Today's guest is Nick Adams. Nick was a youth camp founder, director, a pastor, a business owner, and a commercial residential landlord. But he's actually transitioned into writing books. His first book, Being the Dad You Wish You Had, Five Big Stones for Effective Fatherhood, is already out, and he's actually researching for a second book. He was born and raised in Northeast Tennessee and has spent the majority of his life in that region, raising four amazing children and fostering others along the way. His favorite thing to do is father. I gotta love that, right? He spent tons of time traveling. He's visited 6 to 7 continents, which is awesome. I gotta talk to him about that. But nothing compares to being a dad, of course. He skis, runs marathons, he camps, he hikes, he reads avidly, everything from classics to biographies. He attended East Tennessee State University, where he got his degree in computer science and mass communications. This is gonna be an exciting one for us to join.
Don't move. You already know.
You're listening to the Forfeit Fatherhood Podcast. And we're having conversations with dope dads covering the four pillars of fatherhood. We call it the Fit Fatherhood Formula. Faith, family, finance, and fitness. That's right. These dads are setting the pace in business and fatherhood. This show isn't only about the outside success. We're getting down to who you are. Gentlemen, it's time to get fit. And now, let's get into the show.
Let's get into the show.
All right. Welcome back to the Forfeit Fatherhood Podcast, a podcast for fathers by fathers, where we talk about the four pillars of fatherhood, which are faith, family, finance, and fitness. And I have a guest with me today. I know you guys are always excited about the guests that I have on. Not that you guys don't want to hear me talk, but it's always nice to have another dad on to get his perspective on fatherhood and his fatherhood journey. Today, my guest is Nick Adams. Nick, how you doing today?
I am fantastic, Rod. It's great to be with you.
Yeah, I'm excited.
That's a fact.
But you've gone from birth to adulthood a couple times, so I'm excited to hear a little bit about your journey. But before we get into that, Nick, why don't you tell us a little bit about yourself?
Well, I am, as you've alluded to, a father of four. I have two adult children and two children who are in middle school. I'm an entrepreneur. I've started multiple businesses, everything from nonprofit organizations to churches to businesses. So, and now I am an author. So I've got variety of things that I've done occupationally and those kinds of experiences.
So what made you get into authoring? Like what was the transition? What kind of happened there?
Yeah, it was really fascinating. I have, you know, as I said, I have several different businesses that I've worked with. And as I've been working in business, I would find myself sometimes saying to the people around me, you know, this particular employee has got a lot of potential. He's a really good guy. I like him a lot. It's just that he was raised by wolves. Like he just didn't have the skills of life that he needed. Not even work skills, just life skills. Couldn't connect with other people, couldn't manage his home, couldn't manage his finances. It was always a disaster, which then kind of bled over into his work world. And so I just heard myself saying that kind of regularly. He's a good guy. He just was raised by wolves. And so then one night we were eating dinner around the dining room table and my son was reading Conversation Starters. And the Conversation Starters was, if you could change one thing, what would it be? And, you know, sometimes you hear a conversation starter and it's like, I have no, you just kind of, your brain just twirls. But
right.
As soon as he said that, I mean, immediately I thought, man, if I could change one thing, I would create a world of effective fathers. And that became the beginning of the journey to writing this book, Being the Dad You Wish You Had, Five Stones for Effective Fatherhood. And it triggered that of, you know, I really do want to change the world by helping fathers be more effective. And so that was the beginning of the journey.
I like that. And it's always interesting how these things happen, right? Like there's just like this, almost like an aha moment, right? Like it just
Absolutely.
Kind of sparked for you. It's funny The Raised by Wolves thing is something that I say to my wife all the time. She's an amazing person, amazing person. And I'm not just saying that because she'll listen to the podcast and she'll get me later for not. But I always tell her she was raised by wolves because her dad worked and her mom worked. So it was her and her brothers. And so because they're always working, they're kind of not raising themselves, but, you know, they're kind of left to their own devices often. Right. And with two older, well, she has an older brother and younger brother, but with two boys in the house, you know, boys are boys, right? We're wild and we're crazy. And so I always tell her, like, man, I'm so amazed by who you became because you were definitely raised by wolves. But yeah, and her dad, I've said this to him before too, and we joke about it all the time, and I call him the alpha wolf because you know, he was there obviously and present and doing all the things that, you know, a father should do, but because he was trying to provide, he wasn't able to be there maybe all the time that he wanted to be, and so he was kind of depending on everybody to do their thing. And I'm like, man, you got so lucky.
That's awesome. That's great.
But I really like what you said though, an effective father. What do you mean when you say effective father? Because I think that's something that's really, really important, because there's a lot of us that are fathers or just become fathers. And there's some of us that are doing fathering really well and some that aren't. But when you say effective fathering, it sounds like you have something specific there.
Yeah. I mean, to me, what I'm thinking of when I say effective fathers is that you are able to take a child. You know, I was talking to somebody recently and they said the goal of fatherhood is not to raise children. It's to raise adults. You know, I thought, that's a great sense.
Bingo.
You know, and when I think about effective fatherhood, that's really what I'm saying, is that you're able to, in a healthy way, help a child navigate the path from infancy to being a healthy adult, you know, that is able to interact in the world in a healthy way and to make an impact on their culture and society.
Yeah, I like that. And I've heard that before and I've said that before, is that, you know, a lot of times we look at our children and we see them as children and we don't realize that they are adults, and the adults that we work with, that we interact with in society, were once children. And yeah. If we don't raise our children to, we aren't raising our children to be children, right? We're raising them to be adults. And so we have to give them the characteristics of an adult, the understanding that an adult needs to have. And there's a very delicate balance of doing that, right? Because you don't want to, I mean, a lot of it as a child, they just don't understand it, right? They have no context to it. So you can't treat them completely like adults, but you do have to install some of those intangible things that they'll need as an adult.
Yeah, for sure. And I think, yeah, you know, a big piece of it is to understand where that child is in the growth process and then interact with them where they are, giving them the tools they need for the future. So that, you know, one of the things that I talk about in the book and I think is so important is to understand that there are stages of childhood. And in each of those different stages, as dads, we have different roles. And so to be an effective father, you got to understand what your role is at each age that child is, and then give them the support or the instruction or whatever it is that they need at that age to help them grow into adulthood.
I'm going to ask questions about the book. I don't want to give it all away though. So if we're giving away too much of the book, just stop me. But I am curious, what are some of those stages? Because two questions, I guess. What are some of those stages, and then how do we recognize when they're in that stage? Like what are we looking for?
Yeah. You know, I think, and let me say up front, this is not from me. This is from a couple named the Ezzos, who I got some great material from when I was just starting out in fatherhood. And they talked about the stages. And so, I mean, I'm sure there's lots of people who talk about these, but I want to be clear, this is not me. I didn't come up with these ideas.
Okay.
But the first stage is like 0 to 4, 5 years old. Your child really understand authority. And your responsibility as the parent or as the father is to be a disciplinarian. It is to help them understand that if you listen and obey, the world treats you better. Things go better for you. If you stay in the parameters, then you are going to have less pain in life. And, you know, one of the things I've heard myself telling my kids a lot when we were in that stage is, I know this hurts. It's supposed to hurt. You know, when I take that toy that you want, or when I give you, put you in timeout, that's not fun. You know, are you enjoying yourself? No, Dad. Good. I don't want you to enjoy yourself, because you've got to understand that when you break the rules, it brings pain into your life. And so in that stage, my main goal is to help them understand how to submit to authority, and that there is authority, and that healthy authority is given by God. And just kind of, that's my goal. And then from the time they're, you know, 4 or 5 until they're about 10, 11, I'm supposed to be teaching. They're in a stage where they're learning. They're now able to understand the concepts I'm saying, and they're able to focus on the teaching part of life. And so now my focus isn't so much on discipline, discipline, discipline. It's on instruction. Here's how life works. Here's the things you need to know about how to be a man. Here's the stuff you need to know about what men are looking for in women. Here, you know, and so I'm talking all the time. And, you know, I've made it a point to try to take my kids to school in the morning so that I could talk to them all the way to school about what you're going to encounter today at school, and how to encounter life, and how to be the person you want to be. And it's just teaching, 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 teaching. And then about the time they turn 11, 12 through the teen years, my job, and I think Rod, you might connect with this, is to be a coach. You know, I'm not playing the game. I'm coaching from the sideline. And I think one of the things, you know, I've been a youth pastor and a camp director for years. That's been a huge part of what I've done in life. And one of the things I've seen is that parents get in those teen years and they freak out, because now a 5-year-old, they're not going to do any real damage to themselves. I mean, you know, as long as you keep them out of the streets, you know what I mean?
Right.
But when you've got a 14, 15, 16-year-old and you're giving them car keys, all of a sudden it's like, oh my gosh, like, you know, we start seeing, you know, teen pregnancies and drugs, and it just, everything is terrifying. And the stakes are so high that then we try to be disciplinarians. It's like we want to tighten down on everything, and you know, you can't do anything without Dad knowing what's going on and where you are, and I'm going to call you every 30 minutes. But you've got your parenting style is backwards. That's the stuff you do when they're 2, 3, 4, 5. Now when they're teenagers, I'm the coach, and my kids get to make a lot of decisions. They don't make every decision, but they make decisions, and I'm there to coach them through that and to give them input and to ask them questions. And as long as I can, I let them make choices, and knowing sometimes they're going to make bad ones. Because that's a part of life, isn't it? You know, that we got to make some bad choices to learn how to make good choices. And so, and I've rambled on too long, but then the last stage is friendship. It's when they're adults. You know, they're now living outside of your home, and the goal is for them to be my friend and for us to have a relationship. My married adult daughter came and played in the snow with me today, you know, because we just have relationships. And that's what I want to keep with all of my kids. So those are the 4 stages.
I like that. So disciplinarian, teacher, coach, friend.
Yeah.
Okay. In that order, though, don't mix it up.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Because we want to be disciplinarians when they're teenagers, and that just doesn't work so well. That's where you have so much problem with teenage rebellion.
Yeah, that's one of the things that I tell when I was running a gym, when I was kind of managing, you know, coaches at these different gyms. One of the things that I would tell them is when you get a team or you get a new athlete in, a lot of times younger coaches want to be friends with that athlete, especially when they're professional athletes. They want to be friends with that athlete. They want to be cool with that athlete. And that's okay, but it's not first, right? You actually want to, you either want to win, earn, or gain their respect first, and then be friends second, because it's always hard to go backwards. Yeah. Like if I'm your friend and I'm, you know, we're hanging out during the workouts and we're laughing and joking, and then I tell you did something wrong, or I tell you got to do that rep again, or I make you do some conditioning, our relationship now is strained because I'm trying to be somebody you don't know me as, right? You don't know me as a disciplinarian. I'm your friend. So I always tell coaches, you know, you have to set that boundary early because they'll respect it. And then we can be friends later, right? We can hang out later, not hang out. You probably don't want to ever hang out with your athletes like that, but you can do some things like that later on as you progress in the relationship. But it's really hard to go from friend to disciplinarian. So I like discipline first, friend at the end. I like that order for sure.
Yeah, absolutely. That is the same principle. What you're talking about is the exact same principle. You get the discipline first, then you do the instruction, then you do the coaching, and then, you know, then you can have friendship.
Yeah. So I know some people are kind of wonder this, and I know that there's some crossover between teacher and coach, right? I know you mentioned being in the game and not being in the game. But what would you say is the difference between the two? Because I know coaches teach, right? We instruct, we guide, we lead. And I feel like sometimes teachers do the same thing. So what would you say is the delineating factor between the two?
Yeah, I mean, I think you're absolutely right. You coach has to teach, but the majority of the base work of your teaching has already happened when they're a little bit younger. And it to me, it'd be like what you do in coaching when you practice, you know, you get your basics down and you focus on your basics and you hone those basics and you do those drills before the game. But when you get into the game, it's not the time to start practicing. It's the time that the coach is going to yell from the sidelines, you know, but you're not actually, he's not going to pull you out and tell you to, you know, to do some kind of basic skill that you're trying to learn. It's too late for that. And that's kind of what I'm referring to. You know, yes, I'm still going to be instructing. The teen years are huge times for instruction. But if I think of my instruction more as I'm going to give them permission to start making some of their own choices, and I'm going to give them more freedom, and I'm going to teach, and I'm going to speak into it, and I'm going to coach from the sideline, that's the differentiation for me.
Okay, that makes sense. So you know, in the teaching phase of it, you're kind of laying the groundwork. You're giving them, like you said, the fundamentals of okay, these are some of the things that will happen in the game, which is happening a couple of years from now. And I'm kind of teaching you how to move and how to adjust and how to advocate for yourself, or maybe how to, you know, do whatever it is you need to do. And then the game comes, we're talking about these teen years, and now you've got to go do it, right? And if you make a mistake or you have a question, you can always come to me and ask, and I'm going to help you out. But the decisions are yours to make, because I've given you context to make those decisions. I've taught you, or at least told you that these things may come up, and I told you how you can react to them and what may happen. Okay, that makes perfect sense. I like that. Because I was wondering myself the difference between the two, but that makes it really, really clear. So I hopefully guys get that.
Yeah, I think it's super important, you know, to when they're in that teaching phase, it's really not the time that I'm going to let them decide a whole lot of stuff for themselves. I mean, by the time a kid is, you know, 5, 6 to 10, I'm still making a whole lot of their decisions, you know, as to where they can go and what and how that looks and how long they can be there and when they're going to bed and what time they're going to, you know, get up in the morning. They're making a lot of those decisions. You know, I've got a middle school son, and, you know, he told me the other day he fell asleep in class, and I'm like, well, bud, you're probably not going to bed early enough. And he's like, well, I went to bed early. And I'm like, okay, that's cool. You know, because he gets to make that decision, you know, within reason. Now, if I found out he's staying up till 2 or 3 o'clock in the morning, we'd have a little conversation. There'd be time for some instruction, but within reason, okay. You know, he said he was in bed by 10. That's not too late, but maybe it is if you're still sleepy the next morning. You know, that's your, how you can kind of judge that. So that's what I consider coaching, is I'm letting him make a choice that's not life altering. It's not going to destroy his academic career. He got in trouble at school because he fell asleep in class. Okay, that's good. You know, now you know how that feels. But it's not going to destroy anything. And then I can kind of teach, still leave him a lot of liberty to make choices like that.
Yeah. Okay. I like that because it gives them, especially in those teenage years, because they're getting pretty close to being adults, where they're going to have to make a lot of those decisions on their own. And they're going to have to, you know, be responsible for the repercussions of their actions. And you're kind of giving them a taste of it now. and letting them kind of deal with the consequences of what they've done. And then, like in your example, him falling asleep. Now he knows, like, man, maybe I can't stay up. Like, I thought 10:30 was a good time, but maybe I do need to go to bed a little bit earlier. Then I can try it. He can try it out and see if that works and figure out, you know, or maybe I got up too early or I just didn't sleep well. And just kind of figuring out things now, because again, that sets him up for when he becomes an adult and he's not in your house and it's not school, it's work, right? And you show up late for work or you're too tired to perform your duties. Yeah. Okay. So let's go back for a second and kind of go back to the book. We talked about being an effective father. We've talked about, you know, the stages that your children will go through. What are the stones that you're talking about in the book?
Yes. So when I talk about the big stones, if I can, I'll step back and give you a little bit of background, because
please,
that I'm pulling that from as a picture that works really well for me. And that is, a professor came into a classroom one day with a big bucket, and he mm-hmm. pulled another bucket out, and he got all these big stones out of the bucket, and he put from the one bucket over into the empty bucket. He filled the bucket up with big stones. And he said to his class, "Is the bucket full?" And they said, "Well, yeah." So then he reached under his desk and he pulled out another bucket of stones, except this time they're smaller stones. And he starts pouring these smaller stones in. And of course, they fill in between the big stones, and he pours a lot of stone in there. And he's like, "Okay, is the bucket full?" Well, this time they kind of realized he was pulling their chain a little bit. And so they're like, "Yeah, no, probably not." And so he said, "Oh, good." And so he pulls out a bucket of sand and he pours the sand down onto the stones, the little stones and the big stones. And he's like, "Is the bucket full?" And they're like, "No." So he pulls a bucket of water up out from under his desk and he pours the water into the bucket. And he's like, "Is the bucket full?" And they're like, "Yeah, the bucket's full." And so typically that story is used to talk about time management. I got that from Covey, and he uses it to talk about how to manage your time. If you put the big stones in first, then you can put other things in around them. If you don't get your big stones in first, then they just don't fit in your day. And so I'm taking that analogy and applying it to fatherhood, that if you could get all kinds of, there's, you know, I've listened to people give you like 21 things to do to be a fantastic father, or, you know, 101 things to do with your daughters. And it's like, gosh, I wish I was that smart, but I can't remember 101 things to do. You know, I can't remember 21 things. I'm going to do really well to remember two or three things. And that's really kind of the essence of this book, is you may not be able to remember all the little stuff. You may not do everything just right. But if you can get some of these big stones in your fatherhood bucket, you'll be okay. And so when I talk about the five stones, what I'm really saying is focus on the important stuff. And then you can fit other things in there. I'm not saying that stuff isn't important, but there are some big things that are really important. And if you get it right, your fatherhood's going to be good. It can always be better, but it's going to be good. So when I talk about the five stones, that's what I'm alluding to. And then the five stones that I have in the book is the power of being is the first one. And it's just that, gosh, one of the things I want every dad to know is you have...
I know. The podcast was just starting to get good to you, but I've got something incredible that I want to share with you. And it's not just a program, it's a journey. It's the Present Provider Bootcamp. Now picture this: engaging video sessions, practical worksheets, and a community that's led by yours truly. It's a roadmap to excel in both your career and your family life. If you're ready to redefine your work-life balance, head on over to www.forfitfatherhood.com. and join the Present Provider Bootcamp today. Let's thrive together, dads.
Enormous power just because you're dad. Mm-hmm. And you don't have to be amazing. You are amazing because you're dad. And you know, I do some bring in some statistics and research and stuff that just talks about the power of the influence of a father. And so just to acknowledge that, just to realize, hey, me just being here is huge. Me showing up in my kid's life is huge. Whether my, you know, me and their mom are still together or not, if I can show up, it's huge. And if I'm living in the home with them, then if I can engage, it's huge. I don't have to do everything right. If I can just be engaged, big step. And then the second big stone is just modeling the way. And it's me deciding, what do I want my life to look like? And then how do I help my kids get a hold of that? The third big stone, which is really one of my favorites and I get the most questions about, is to be lovable. And I just think, as dads, if we're the disciplinarians, and we're typically the ones who, you know, are having to kind of toe the line of, you know, mama told you to do that, you better go do it. You know, and the buck stops here. And I think all that is okay. I think it's even right. But in that process, the more we can be off and show our kids our own heart, the more lovable we become, and the more we'll be able to end where we're trying to get to, which is being their friend when they're in their 20s. So that's a few of the stones and kind of what they mean to me.
I like that. You know what I noticed about those as you were kind of talking about them is that they are kind of you centric, like who you are, what you are, how you are, right? Like being lovable is about like the type of person you are, right? And so if I can guess, you know, kind of talking about working on yourself, right? Kind of creating the man and father that you want to be. And I think a lot of times we're so focused on, okay, I'm a father. And so how do I show up for them? Like, what am I doing for them? What am I doing? You know, how do people experiencing me? But the reality is when you're the best version of you, then all of those other things are improved. Right. And so I don't know what the other two are, but I like those three a lot. And I think that they're really, really important. And I think, you know, we, especially the last one, we're talking about being a disciplinarian, but also being lovable. It's one of those things where, like, I was talking to a guy on the podcast and his father passed away and he's, you know, he's really obviously still grieving. And I was just asking him about his relationship with his dad, and none of it was lovable. It was like, you know, he was super tough on me. He was super hard. He was, you know, he's disciplinarian. I don't know if he ever hugged me. I don't know if he ever said he loved me. He never, you know, none of these things. Right. And I'm like, dang, that's tough. I can't imagine what that's like. And even through all that, right, even through all that, going back to your first stone, his son said he was amazing. He was amazing just because he was my dad and because he was my first superhero. And, you know, I looked up to him and I wanted to be like him and I wanted to provide and do all the things that he did, even though he wasn't as lovable. Now, just imagine having the two, right? Being the amazing man that they already see you as and being more of that. And then also being lovable, like that is like a superpower.
Absolutely.
plus another superpower, you know?
Absolutely. Absolutely. And I think you, right as you started talking there, you really did hit the essence of what I think is important about fatherhood. And it's not what am I going to do with my kids, for my kids, it's who am I going to be? Because if I figure out who I'm going to be and who I want to be as a father, then it's going to communicate to them, you know, I'm going to accomplish my goal by working on me. And one of the premises of the book is we're not ever going to be right. We're not ever going to be perfect. We're not ever going to do everything the way we want to. But if we're making progress, if we're becoming a better version of ourselves every day, man, that's gold. And it will be gold for our kids, because one of my favorite things to do and one of my favorite things to tell dads is be transparent, be honest, tell your kids the truth. When you just blow it, when you mess up, go back and apologize and own your stuff, you know, because that's two things. It helps them to see what a man does, because in my opinion, a man will own their stuff. They'll be like, you know what, the way I the way I talked to you was wrong. I was too angry. That was not that big of a deal. I overreacted. Will you forgive me? Well, that's me owning that I'm not perfect. Well, my kids need to own they're not perfect. And so I'm modeling what I want to see them do. And it makes me more lovable because I'm being humble and I'm being transparent and I'm being real with them and going, you know, that man, that I just blew that. That was terrible. Wish I had not done that like that. Could you forgive me? And that empowers them to be able to say, yeah, I'll forgive you for that. And it just makes me a more lovable person. If I have to just hold on that I'm right and everything I do is right and I'm never going to admit I made a mistake, it's hard to love somebody like that.
Yeah. It adds some vulnerability and authenticity too. It's like we love for our leaders to be superheroes, but what makes us love them even more is their humanity. Right? Absolutely. Like I guess I'll use Spider-Man probably as an example because he seems or any one of the Marvel characters, the heroes, right? Not the villains, but even the villains, right? Even the villains have a following of people who see them for who they are, right? Or whatever their goal or their mission is, and they can align with it because they know like he genuinely means this. Right. When we're talking about like a superhero, we know that they aren't perfect and they have their flaws and that, you know, and I was using Spider-Man because he's like a kid. He's a kid and he's saving the city, but he's also like fun. And like, I can enjoy that. And he isn't winning all the time. I saw Spider-Man on the subway get beat up. But then he came back and he said, you know what I mean? That like us being able to see that like draws us to him. And you know what I mean?
Absolutely.
So I think the same thing happens with fathers. Now I'm not saying to show all of your flaws and all of your weaknesses, although there may be an opportunity to do that. But when something happens, I think you teach them a very, very valuable lesson when you do, like you said, own up to it, accept, you know, where you may have fallen short and show them this is how a superhero, which, you know, someday you may be or you may be with, he handles when things don't go his way. Right. He doesn't blow up. He doesn't, you know, bottle it up, and he actually processes it, deals with it and moves forward accordingly. And he treats the people who are in his care that he is leading with the same kind of compassion and care that he would want for himself.
Yeah, absolutely.
And this is good. I got to get a copy of this thing, man. This is a good book. If I've got to get a copy, and everybody that's listening has got to get a copy. This sounds like gold. It absolutely sounds like gold. I did see though that you're in the process of researching for another book. You've become a full blown author now. So what are we thinking about for the second book? And we're going to get back to the first one, but I'm curious now. What's the second book?
Yeah, the second book is going to be about being a man, just masculinity and healthy masculinity. We live in a culture, and here's it comes out of this first book I wrote. I did a Google search for how do men pass on masculinity to their sons as I was writing this being a dad book, toxic in it. And when you search masculinity, the first 22 responses came back with toxic. And man, what a hard culture to be a man in. You know, when all you hear is that it's toxic and that masculinity is toxic. And so I started kind of looking into that and thinking about, well, what does that mean? You know, and I put in the book a sentence that when my mother read it, she asked me to take it out. But it was just, you know, we've got a world that doesn't really want they don't really want men. They want men without balls. And she was uncomfortable with the balls. So for my mother's sake, I took that out. But it's just that people are afraid of masculinity. And I'm not saying there's not some really toxic masculinity out there. That's not the point. It's that what's happened, or in my opinion, what's happened is that we've been told what not to be, but no one's told us what to be. It's all about, you know, it's toxic. This is toxic. That's toxic. But man, masculinity is important, and it is, we've got to show up as men in our culture. And so I'm now working on, you know, what is healthy masculinity? And I'm not real far into it, but so far I've gotten to four things that I think are healthy masculine traits. You know, one of them is that men are self-reliant. And I don't mean that they don't have relationships and they're not in friendships and they're not dependent on other people. I just mean that at the end of the day, I know I'm responsible for myself and I'm responsible for my family and I got to figure my stuff out. I can't sit back and go, oh, well, it just didn't work out for me. Well, that doesn't work. If you're a man, you stand up and figure out how to make it work because you have to do that. So, you know, that's one of them. Taking care of people who can't take care of themselves is another part of masculinity, I believe, is that you take care of the underdog. You take care of people who are getting taken advantage of. You make sure that our culture and our society is fair and that there's equality. That's masculine. That's a healthy trait of masculinity. That men, a healthy man respects themselves and they're going to respect other people. And then the fourth one is dropped out of my brain, but so that's the path I'm going down is try to figure out what does it mean to be masculine and how do you do it in this culture?
Yeah. That's interesting. This past March, we did a series on the podcast and on social media where we're just trying to figure out, because it's the same thing, right? Masculinity is in crisis because there isn't like a clear definition of what masculine is.
Right.
Because there's so many people's opinions. There's so many views. There's guys in different situations and different experiences and different environments. And we all are operating to the best of our ability within those environments. Right. And so masculinity can look like a bunch of different things. It can be any number of things. Right. And I think that makes it hard to define. And so you get situations where masculinity rubs up against insecurity and it is labeled as toxic. Where you get situations where a masculine trait is used when maybe a more or less masculine trait could be used in that particular. So I don't want to say feminine trait could be used in that, but maybe a less masculine trait could be used in that form. And so people are like, that's toxic. Like you can't be aggressive in a situation. This situation needed nurturing and you were aggressive. That was toxic for the situation.
Right.
I think masculinity to some degree runs on a scale. And there's some things that are higher up on the scale that are, you know, really, really masculine. Some things that are, you know, a little lower on the scale that maybe could be considered feminine energy or whatever. But I think that makes it hard for people to define. And I think when we get into situations where masculinity is all you have, masculinity becomes toxic.
Right.
And that's unfortunate, you know, because as you mentioned, we aren't in a situation where fathers are passing down or explaining to or teaching, coaching what masculinity is for their sons or didn't in the previous, I guess, generation, because this generation is struggling with it. I don't know. I wasn't in the last generation, so I don't know. But I know this generation is struggling with it. And I think we lack some of the rites of passage that we maybe got in previous generations that allowed us to have a better grasp on masculinity and how we operate as men. This book isn't out yet, you know, but I think this is going to be really good.
Yeah. And I've gone back because I think a lot of what you're saying is so important. It's everything is in flux and there are a lot of things that need to change, you know, and then a lot of it is cultural. And I'm trying to think of masculinity even outside of the American culture, like what? Because really, to be masculine should not just be to be American or to be, Indian or Hispanic. There should be some parts of masculinity that go past all of that. And so I've gone back to Aristotle and Socrates and just try to, you know, go way back and look at the knights and what, you know, the ideas that they had for what was masculine and try to pull all that together. And The one that I missed just a minute ago, which I think is really important, is self-mastery. You know, that a man is able to master himself, that you really, you aren't a man if you can't master you. And so you respect others, you respect yourself, you self-master, you live justly in the world, and then you're kind of self-reliant. And I think those are just four big pillars of what it looks like to be a man, and how to flesh that out then is kind of what the book's going to look like.
Yeah, I like that. And that's definitely a necessary book, because like I said, we spent the whole month of March through various, like I said, lives and podcasts and interviews, and like guys just sending me like emails and text messages and DMs. And by the end of the month, not that I was more confused than when we started, but we still had just like a bunch of wide ranging definitions and ideas and thoughts of what masculinity is. There was some core pieces, and the stuff that you mentioned were definitely in there. And those are things that I think are really, really good and should be continued to be pushed. So I'm glad you're writing about them. But there was just so much kind of fluff.
Is that
around
podcast
what,
available? Can I go back and are those still available? I'd love to listen to them.
Yeah, they still are. They still are. You have to go back and look at March. The lives I haven't. You know what's funny is I recorded those lives, and I think you could take a live off of Instagram and just like download it and save it. So I'll try that. I'll try to put it on there, and maybe I'll just send them over to you. So you can get
that.
Them.
That sounds like interesting stuff.
Yeah. Yeah. So do you have an idea of when that'll be out? Or are you still pretty early in the process
of
writing?
Early. Still pretty early. Okay. Just doing research. Still hadn't even started writing.
No pressure. You take your time. That's a big, that's a heavy load to lift. But I'm glad that somebody, and there's obviously other books about the topic, but I'm glad that somebody like you is going to take it on and kind of give us your perspective with research, not just your opinions. I think there's a lot of books that are opinion based, and that's cool, right? Everybody's opinion is valuable. But you know, some research and some facts and some things that, you know, support that and help that out, I think are really, really good.
I'm looking forward to it. It should be it's going to be a process, but it's a fun process.
Let's go back just a little bit. You've got four kids, right?
That's correct.
Your oldest is 24. Is that correct?
Oldest is 24. And then I've got a 22-year-old and a 13-year-old and a 12-year-old.
Okay. Mixed boys and girls?
My two oldest are girls and my two youngest are boys.
Okay. All right. So that good. Or that's perfect. All right. So this is my question is, I only have girls. You know, I know there's a bunch of guys listening that have mixed or boys and girls. And as far as the journey of fatherhood, and you're still, you know, you're in the midway point with the boys, but this is kind of comparing that time frame from birth to middle school, 13, 14 years old. What are, if any of the differences that you see in terms of raising them the way that you raise them? Is there, do you do things differently with your boys, and maybe, and obviously times have changed, but do things differently with your boys than you do with your girls? Or are you still kind of following along that trajectory and kind of, you know, teaching, coaching, that kind of thing?
Yeah, I think it's, to me, every child is different, and my interaction with each child is different because they have different needs. And so the big stones stay the same. There's certain things that I do. I want all my kids to think I'm lovable. I want all of my kids to experience me as being present and in their life. You know, I want to model how life should be lived and good attitudes. And so there's a lot of things are the same, but my individual interaction with each child is totally different because those kids are totally different. And so as I'm teaching, I try to teach in a way that they'll be able to understand. Or when I'm disciplining, I didn't discipline the kids the same because some of them would really respond. Some of my kids, if I just had a stern voice, that was it. That's all they needed, man. They were on track. And then I had a couple, you know, a stern voice. They didn't even know I was in the room. You know, it's going to take a lot more than that to get their attention.
Yeah.
And so, you know, I, definitely interact differently with each one of them, not just based on gender, but just on who they are. And then, yes, it's very different raising boys and girls, you know. Boys are just wild. They've got that streak in them that, you know, there's just a lot of energy and there's, I mean, there's a lot of testosterone. That's just, I mean, they're boys. And so lots of roughhousing, lots of loud, lots, you know, I was an only child. And so I'm used to quiet and I want things to be quiet and calm. And man, these little critters, they run around the house and chase each other and scream like banshees. And, you know, it's a very, very different feel. But the principles are the same. You know, and I think that's the thing you got to hold on to is what are the things you're trying to accomplish? And then the way you actually do it is going to change with each child.
Got it. Okay. All right. I'm just curious because, you know, I wonder if obviously, like you said, some of those transitions are the same, but every kid is different. And I think a lot of guys struggle with that as well, because, you know, I have to show up as this guy for this kid and this guy for that kid. And, you know, when you have multiple kids, it becomes like, not that you have different personalities, but you've got to be these different versions of yourself in different situations. But I think embracing that and understanding that is really cool. And it's something that I heard somebody say the other day is that, you know, kids are born in the same house or sort of born to the same house, born to the same parents, but they technically have different parents. Because those parents parent them in a way that's different than their brothers or sisters, right? Like my mom and dad are my mom and dad. We share mom and dad, but my mom and dad are mom and dad to me in a very different way than they are to my sisters. You know, they and even to this day, even as adults, like my relationship with my father, and it's funny to see it happen, like to see, because now I'm aware of it as I'm older, right? And when I was a kid, it was like, oh, that's unfair. But now as I'm older, I understand that, like, if he said it to me that way, I probably wouldn't have done it. Or if that was the disciplinary tactic that he used on her, it wasn't going to go well, you know? And so I can see it now as an adult. As a kid, I was like, man, that's so unfair. You're so nice to them. You let them get away with everything. You're so, you know, you're strict with me. but I understand it as an adult. And now my dad's just soft. He's a pushover with the grandkids. He does whatever they want him to do now. But so like, man, if I'd had that dad, I don't know what I would have been doing myself. but I understand it all now. Especially now in this fatherhood space, as I'm exploring more and learning more to be a better father and to help fathers be better fathers, I can really see it. But I was curious, you know, what your experience was with it. But you mentioned something at the start of that when you were answering that question. You mentioned, you know, you want to be present for your children. And that's been a big point for me over the last few weeks, is talking about that presence and the importance of presence as a father. Because I think when we ask guys what a father is, they typically start off with one of the three P's. Which is be present. And that's not normally the first one. It's normally protect, provide, or provide, protect. And then presence is somewhere along the line and maybe not even getting mentioned. Well, I think it might be one of the most important and most impactful ones. How was you going about, you know, making sure you're present as, you know, you're running businesses, you're doing all the different things that you were doing to, you know, provide? How are you also making sure that you were present?
Yeah, I think that is so important, and it's so easy for us as men to blow past that. I mean, I think most men aren't real good at connecting on. Let's not say they're not good. It's just not our first strength at connecting on kind of an emotional level, on a relational level, and I think that's a part of being present, is to, you know, not just be in the house with my kids, but to actually engage with them and to hear where they are and how they're experiencing life. And it's.
What's up, fellas? Hey, are you ready to supercharge your journey to becoming the best version of yourself? Introducing the Fatherhood Roadmap, the ultimate guide for every man. Uncover the secrets of success in 10 must-do principles. Focus your energy, guard your time, train your mind and body, think for yourself, curate your friends and environment, keep your promises, stay cheerful and constructive, and upgrade the world. Now, I know you're not going to remember all of those, and that's why it's in the book. You got to go ahead and grab it. Elevate your game, redefine your path, and embrace the power of positive change. Are you ready for the roadmap to greatness? Head over to www.forfeitfatherhood.com and grab your copy today.
It's so easy to come in from a hectic day and, you know, you had trouble at work and traffic on the highway, and you get home and you're frustrated and you're still kind of jacked up. And you know, you just miss where your kids are emotionally. And so one of the things I've always, I mean, it sounds simple, but I've just tried to be aware of that, that, mm-hmm. you know, I need to know where they are so that they can, so I can connect with them. They can't understand where I am. They're not going to understand the stress of my day. It doesn't help to say, oh, daddy had a hard day at work today. You know, I'm sorry, or give me a little space, or they don't get it. They don't have the experience to know what that means. And mm-hmm. so I've got to figure out where they are emotionally and then try to connect to that. So, you know, I think that's one of the huge challenges is just remembering that. Years ago, when I just had started the fatherhood journey, I heard someone say one of the most important things as a dad is to respond to your kids according to their emotional energy. And so if they come in and they're all excited about this new toy, you know, daddy, look at this doll, look at this doll. And they're all excited. And you're like, oh yeah, you just crushed them because in their world, that doll was huge and it was the most important thing going on. And you just said, oh, that's not important. And so you probably aren't very important either. That's what they heard. But man, mm-hmm. when they come running with that doll, they're like, oh, daddy, look at my doll, look at my doll. And you grab that thing and you're like, oh, that is great. And what all does it say? And oh, you mean it wets itself? You know, and you just engage with that yeah. same level of enthusiasm. Then now you're present and you've really connected with your kids in a powerful and meaningful way. And so I've just tried to hold that in mind all through the years that I want to reflect back the emotional energy they're bringing to a situation, because for me, a lot of the stuff they're experiencing, it's just not exciting anymore. You know, I mean, you go to an amusement park. Well, I still love amusement parks and I love to ride roller coasters and that's all stuff I love, but it's not the same for me as it is for them, because this is their first roller coaster. You know, this is their first time here. And so to be able to really engage in that energy helps you be present. So that, you know, that's kind of a big answer. A simple answer is, man, I made sure that I was home every night for dinner. You know, I just made sure I was. I didn't go out with the guys after work. I mean, really every night always came home and had dinner together as a family. And was with my kids. I was physically present, which gave me the opportunity to be emotionally present.
Beautiful, beautiful. Well said, well said. The long and the short version, very well said. There's something that, this is kind of in something that you said, something that my wife came up with during the pandemic. We were both, you know, everybody was, I mean, it's California, right? So everybody was, it was locked down.
Right.
You couldn't leave your house. There was a curfew, everybody's home. But we still had to work. So we're both working from home on computers. She's in the office, I'm in the living room, or vice versa. And she came up with this idea of the mental commute. Because typically you work outside the house, you have time to decompress on the way home. But when we're working in the house, like I step out of the office and life is right there. Like it's meeting me at the door. And I have literally no time to separate from whatever chaos happened at work and what's happening at home. And so she came up with this idea of, you know, well, once you're finished with work, you close your computer, you take 5 minutes, 10 minutes, whatever you need, and you're going to take a mental commute, right? You got to mentally get out of that space. And so that's awesome. When you open the door, you can greet your family as the person that you want to be.
That's great.
When we went, and it worked amazingly for us, amazingly. And then because everybody knew, right, we explained it to our kids of what that was. Like, they knew that, you know, if they came in before I finished work, I hadn't yet taken a mental commute. So I was still work dad. I wasn't home dad. So they had an idea. But then once everything, you know, kind of went back to normal, we're going back to work. We lost that for a second because, you know, we get into our cars after work and we don't just shut off, you know, all the work things that are going on and maybe all the stress that's, and then you get into the, you know, you, like you say, you get into your actual commute and there's traffic and it's stop and go and people are honking horn. I live in Southern California, so traffic is terrible almost all the time. Right. And so that's stressful. And then you get out of your car, you walk in the door and life hits you. Right. And that's tough. And so, and it's funny because I see guys do it and it's probably not the same way. And you'll hear about it or hear people do it is, you know, you get home and you sit in your car for a second before you get out. We do it with an intention, right? We have an intent when we do it though. When I come home, I pull into the driveway and it's not as long as it used to be. I might take 30 seconds to a minute and just breathe and, you know, clear my head, get my thoughts together. Because as you mentioned, when I walk in the door, and this doesn't happen often because I typically pick my kids up from school, but coming home at night sometimes, they're going to greet me with a certain amount of energy, especially if they haven't seen me all day. And if I drag my tail in here and I'm tired and exhausted, what I'm going to be saying to them without saying it is, what your excitement is not that important to me. Like you said, you're not that important to me. And eventually they just pull away. They don't want to be told that. Nobody wants to be told that. No one wants to feel that. And so, fellas that are listening in your life, however that situation works, you have to figure out how to separate or disconnect so that you can match the energy that your family is bringing you so that they feel loved and appreciated and enjoyed by you. And I always say, be interested in the things that they're interested in. You're right. I get, as I've gotten older, I'm starting to get like motion sickness on rides. Like I've always like the teacups and like the spinning rides. Oh. They've always killed me. Right. So I avoid those like the plague, but now like some roller coasters, like we'll get off and I'm like, oh, I'm ruined for the rest of the day. but my kids love them. And so I'm like, okay, I'm gonna take the sacrifice. All right, let's do it. Just 30 seconds of roller coaster. And then I need to get like a ginger ale because my stomach's gonna be messed up. But we're doing this thing because you're excited about it. And I want you to have the experience of like the fun that you're having. You're getting to have fun with dad. And that's a memory that's gonna be cemented in your life forever. Yeah, because I could definitely be like, you know, no, get on it yourself. Dad's sick. Or no, we're not getting on because dad's going to get sick. I'm not getting on the teacups, though. I'm not doing that. The tilt-a-whirl thing where we're all stuck to the side. No, I'm not doing that. You can go. You can get on that with your friends and you guys can throw up on each other. But I'm not doing it.
I'm with you, Rod. I'm totally with you on those.
but the point of all that is if you can find the space, get some kind of mental commute going. And it's really just mindfulness. It's meditation. Yeah. It might even be prayer, where you're just, you know, you spending a second with yourself or with God and just, you know, asking for peace and getting that so that you can go in and be, as you said, be the man that you want to be the father that you want to be. That space allows you to do that and be present the way you want to be. I think that's necessary for a lot of us because we do tend to, because of we're men and we don't have the resources, we tend to carry things with us and bottle them up because we don't share them with anybody else. And so we come in and we aren't as lovable because we're frustrated or because we're tired. And in order for us to, you know, have those big rocks checked off, have those big rocks lifted or filled into our jar or bucket. We have to find ways to do that. Okay. So, you know, we've talked about a whole lot here and this has been a really good episode. I think guys are going to get a lot out of this. I think that I've gotten a lot out of it. And so I appreciate you for your time. Before we go, I have a couple questions that I always like to ask. And we get different answers, right? Like I talked about masculinity, there's so many different answers and things that you kind of put into masculinity. And I think fatherhood is the same way. But I always like to ask, because I can gain a little bit of knowledge, or guys can gain a little bit of knowledge. But what does fatherhood mean to you?
I think that's such a great question. But I think for me, fatherhood is an ongoing relationship from birth to probably my death, of mentoring, guiding, loving, supporting. You know, I think that's the big thing I'm trying to do. I want my kids to always know that I'm there. I tell them all the time, I will always love you. I may not always like you. I might not always like your choices, but I will always love you. And I'm a safe place. There's not anything you can't say. You know, this is a safe place. And so I want them to feel emotionally supported. I want to always be able to be a person that's trying to mentor or coach or guide or teach, so that they can be the best version of themselves. And then, you know, like I've said earlier, in the end of it all, I want to have lifelong relationship with my kids. And I want to go the distance with them, you know, that they can do things I don't like, they can make choices I don't agree with, but there won't ever be that time that there's something that'll keep me from being able or being willing to be in a relationship with
them. You know, I don't know if you've heard of Simon Sinek. He's like a leadership guru. He talks about, I think in his latest book, or it might be the one before this latest one, he talks about what he calls the infinite game. And he talks about parenting being like the primary example of that, because there is no halftime. There's no end of game, right? If there's end of game, you can kind of judge how well you're doing or kind of keep score on it. But because there is no end of it, it's kind of like you're always in a quest to become. You're always becoming, or you're getting better at, or you're doing things. I think fatherhood is that way. And I know you mentioned, you know, until the end of your life, but the reality is it goes far beyond that, because my daughters have never met my grandfather, but I have definitely shared things that my grandfather taught me, right? Or old sayings or things that he used to say, I'll say them. And I'm like, dang, that's my grandfather parenting my kids through me. Like that lasts forever. You know what I mean? So that's why I say, when you become a father, you're a father forever, good or bad, right? If you aren't doing this thing right, people are going to say, well, my great grandfather was a terrible man, you know? Because you're always going to be someone's father, right? Like even, you know, several grandfathers down the line, you're like, that was my great, great grandmother's father. And so you have to take it with that weight. Is that you're going to be a father for eternity. And how do you want your story to be told?
That's gold right there, Rob. You know, and that it really is. I think, because that's so true, that my grandparents and my dad are still living, you know, through me. and the things I say and the way I think, and that's the power of being a father, is that you are going to impact and affect your children long term.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. I got two more questions for you, and it's kind of a two-part question. You're an author now, and you kind of already have done this. So this is kind of like you've got a cheat sheet on this one. But if you had a message, if you had a message that you want to give all fathers, what would that message be? They say you're writing a new book. What would that be?
I think we've been all over it today. You know, I think the big message that I want to give fathers is, you are more important in your kids' lives than you realize, probably. And in a culture that tells you that men aren't very important and masculinity is toxic and all the ways you can screw up and all the bad things you can do, in that kind of environment, incredibly important to your kids. And your interaction with them has the power to change the world. You know, it's going to change their life. But as all of us engage effectively with our kids, it'll change the world. And so I think that's one of the messages, is just, man, you're important. And it's not, gosh, you're important, you better not screw up. That really isn't my message. My message is really, gosh, you're important, period. Mm-hmm. And so because you're so important, here's some things to think about. You know, here's some ways that you can make sure and use that power, that superpower, for good.
You're important. Okay. That book was a bestseller, New York Times bestseller. So they brought you back to write another book, but this one's going to be really, really specific. And it's probably not going to have it's definitely not going to have the mass appeal, because it's not for everybody. It's only for your children. And what do you want that message to be?
Wow. You know, I think the thing that I always want my kids to know is that I am always for them. I love them to pieces. There's never going to be a time I don't love them. There's never going to be a time I'm not for them. And, you know, I said it earlier, good or bad, whether you make good choices or bad choices, whether I like your choices, sometimes I might not even like them, but man, I'll always love them. I've told people, you know, my kids are the only people in the world that I never made a choice to love. Like, when I got married, I made a choice to keep growing in love with my wife. I didn't just like, boom, I'm in love. The first time I saw my firstborn, I can't tell you how overwhelmed I was with love. And I never chose that. I never thought about it. I've never had to choose it. It was just, boom, you know, this amazing, passionate love for my kids. And so that's my message for them, is that I love them to pieces. I'm really proud of them and who they are and who they're becoming. And I'm grateful that God's given me the opportunity to be their dad.
And you know what? From talking to you, from hearing you talk about them, it sounds like they know that they feel that, you know, that they are very aware that's how you feel about them. And that's also important, right? That people know and understand and feel the things that you say, you know, because I think a lot of times we talk about, and it's just going back to, you know, the whole presence and providing thing, that kind of struggle, is that we know we go out and we provide and we will say, you know, I'm doing this for them, but they don't know it, or they don't understand it in that way. Right. You know, I'm sacrificing myself, you know, especially for guys who do manual labor. I'm doing back-breaking work, and I can barely stand up when I come home. And while you understand it to be that, your kids don't know it to be that. All they know is that, you know, dad chose to be a construction worker. That's the job he wanted to have for his whole life. And so he loves it. So when he comes home, he should be happy. And he comes home and he's not happy, you know, because we'll tell our kids all the time, like, you can be whatever you want to be, right? Go up, you'll grow up and you can be the president, or you can be an astronaut, you can be a doctor, a lawyer, whatever, right? We tell them to grow up, be whatever they want to be. So they think that's true for you too. Like, you're doing the job that you want to do. So how are you mad at me when you come home from the life that you wanted to have? And now you tell me, like, that doesn't make sense, right? Like, if I'm a kid and I'm playing outside, when I come inside, I still want to play because I got to do what I wanted to do. I had a good time. So you're going out to do what you want to do, and you come back and you're tired, Dad? How does that work? Yeah, you're frustrated? Like, why? You got to go do the thing that you always wanted to do. So it's important for us to understand that and to make sure that we are explaining to them and really getting them to understand. The feelings that we have, like, we are not just holding it. Like, I love you to pieces is something they should hear often, you know, giving them hugs and kisses and love and attention and care. And like you said, I think it's super awesome that your adult daughter came and played and threw snowballs with you today. Like, that is a phenomenal thing, right? Because you still have that type of relationship, even though we're adults. And it's like, no, I'm going to go have fun with my dad.
Yep.
And that's amazing. So kudos to you, brother. You're doing and have done amazing work. And I don't think that's going to stop anytime soon. If people are wanting to reach out to you, if they want to, you know, get a copy of the book, or if they just want to kind of pick your brain a little bit on fatherhood and maybe even masculinity, now that you're doing some research on that, what would be the best way for them to do that?
Well, you can get the book on Amazon. It's Being the Dad You Wish You Had. and it's available as in a digital format, or you can get it as paperback. Soon, I'm going to be coming out with an audio version. So if you like to listen to things as you drive down the road, that'll be an option probably in the next couple of months. And then if they just want to reach out, they can reach me at info@bean-dash.
Hey, I'll make sure to put that in the show notes, fellas, for you guys that are listening and driving right now. I don't want you to be trying to type that in. You got to be safe so you can make sure you get home. But it'll be in the show notes, so you guys can check that out and make sure you head over and grab your copy of the book. I am an audiobook guy. I will read some books, but the way my life works is I don't have a whole lot of time to sit down and read books, but I love reading. Right. So I will listen to them.
Me and you both.
Sometimes I'll listen and read at the same time if I'm like really, really interested in it. But I'm glad you're coming out with an audio version, because I think that's a barrier for a lot of guys is, you know, I don't have time to sit down and read. And so the audio thing is going to be really good. You know, Nick, thank you, man. I really appreciate you taking the time, first of all, for reaching out initially. You know, I get quite a few people that reach out, and they're not always the best interviews. We usually don't even make it to the interview portion of it. So I'm glad that we were able to. I'm glad that, you know, I was able to have you on, because what you shared in this episode is invaluable. I think, like I said earlier, guys are going to take something away from this and become better men and better fathers. And that is ultimately the goal. So I appreciate your time and your energy today on this podcast.
Rod, I appreciate the opportunity to be here. I just, so many things you've said as we've been talking, I just feel like we have a lot of the same passion and the same energy and perspective. And so I've really enjoyed being with you and being on the show today.
Yeah. And I got to have you back when you finish the book, or as you're getting closer, if you want to talk a little bit more about it or anything, I'd love to have you back on. Like when you have a good guest that has good information and really can carry a conversation, because sometimes it's, you know, it's a podcast, right? And I've listened to podcasts where it's like the host is doing all the heavy lifting, but you came on and you shared openly and honestly, and you gave great information. So I'd love to have you back whenever you want to be back.
Awesome. Thank you so much.
All right, fellas, that is it for this episode of the Forfeit Fatherhood Podcast. I appreciate you guys taking the time out of your busy day. Make sure you like, share, subscribe. Make sure you're following on social media platforms. Make sure you are going over to Amazon and grabbing Nick's book. And then stay tuned for the next one. Make sure you share it once you get it. Let other guys know that there is a book out here that is changing lives of fathers that you just got and read, and that they should get and read. Really appreciate it, Nick. Again, thank you, and I'll talk to you soon.
Thank you.